Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is co-host Daniel McAdams. And Daniel, good to see you.
Good to be with you, Dr. Paul.
I understand our program's a little bit different today. We're actually going to expose ourselves to the audience, and they're going to be sending us questions, so we better be on the ball. So what do we have?
Well, it's another edition of Ask Ron Paul. And we have a few questions from our viewers and listeners via Twitter. Our first question comes from a viewer sending this morning. It is from Julian Sanamo. Other than yourself, who are the featured speakers at your September conference?
Well, some of that's top secret, you know. But, you know, I'm sure looking forward to the conference. Hope to get to meet a lot of people there. And right now it looks like it's really building up some enthusiasm. But you're the organizer. You know a little bit more about the organization and exactly what we're going to do. So why don't you help answer this question?
Well, I'll say that we are going to have a release later today of our first speaker we're going to reveal. We have most of them lined up, a couple more that we're still working on, but we have most of them done, and we'll have a nice, special, and very fun announcement this afternoon. So I hope everyone will get your tickets to the conference, Washington, D.C., September 10th. You can go to the Ron Paul Institute website, ronpaulinstitute.org, and get all the information you need about it. You know, we can't wait to meet people and see people again. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So now to the meet, now you're going to be on the hot seat.
Okay. We'll give it a try.
Let's look at the second question. This comes from Garrett Waits. What government bureaucracies do you think are necessary?
Well, right offhand, not very many. I'd like to get rid of about 90% of it or more. And the people that are remaining, we'd probably not have to call them bureaucrats. But, you know, the founders had a pretty good idea about what to do because they had, an idea that we needed a few departments to run the national government. They thought we should have a State Department so that we can at least relate to and have diplomatic relationships with other countries. They believe we should have a Treasury Department. At the time, they were thinking Treasury would make sure that the coins were full weight and nobody was cheating and nobody was counterfeiting. But Treasury, of course, wasn't meant back then to just borrow money and print money. But they recognized that we had to have a Treasury. But then they also thought that, it's a rough world out there, and there might be a time when the people, through the Congress, would have to declare war. So they had a Department of War. So that was it. And yet today, look at what we have. So many departments, so many agencies under the department. Nobody knows. Nobody, even if they wanted to know exactly what was going on, no one person could figure it out. But the part that I really resent about the bureaucracy, it's a government unto itself. They can write the laws and they can enforce the laws, and you'll be considered guilty until you prove yourself innocent. Just think IRS, and that is a very bad system. But the other thing, and I've been made fun of because I make this point that when I talk about gun control, we shouldn't have an army of people from the federal government policing us, the bureaucrats, with guns. And that's an illegal use of gun as far as I'm concerned. We're not supposed to have a standing army, let alone a standing army patrolling our streets from the federal government. We have well over 100,000 bureaucrats now in the various bureaucracies that are carrying guns. So that would be a good start. But it's not going to be easy because there are too many special interests dependent on it. But our most recent adventure into, expanding the bureaucracy have been the Department of Homeland Security. This has been a monster, and that's been since 2001. Thousands of people, the TSA's involved, a violation of our civil liberties. So the bigger the government, the more government employees at the federal level, the less liberties we have because they are the enforcement agency of the special interest. And therefore, liberty is shrinking. But of course, our goal is to revitalize the love of liberty. And if that is to be successful, of course, we have to shrink the bureaucracy. So the answer is there aren't very many bureaucrats that would be around if we had our way, because we would be emphasizing the whole idea of the rule of justice, equal justice under the law, and not the use of the Justice Department to be used to to pursue and punish special interests. As recently, you know, it became known that the CIA do that too, but I'm thinking the IRS does, picking and choosing to punish people. So I think the viewer is touching on a very important point, because I'm sure he's concerned about liberties. Liberties are infringed. And the greater the size of the bureaucracy, the more our liberties are infringed. A good reason for us all to support the idea of always shrinking the bureaucracy.
All right, well, let's move along to question number 2 or 3, depending on how you count it. And if we can bring that up, that's Arturo Lopez Levy. He asks, should the next president continue Barack Obama's policy of opening and rapprochement with Cuba?
That's an easy one. Absolutely. This is one of the rare good things that's happened in these in the last 8 years, the fact that we're able to now more easily go to Cuba. I'm just wondering what the protectionists are going to do if Cuba starts selling us stuff. But I think it's wonderful. And, of course, they're not a libertarian state, so there's going to be a lot of problems and there'll be a lot of complaints, but they are a close neighbor, and at one time there was a much better relationship with Cuba. There's a lot of people, a lot of Cuban Americans who would like to go visit their relatives in Cuba, and they have been prevented from doing this. But this is very, very good. The more freedom they give the people of Cuba, the better the relationship will be. But at the same time, we have to be careful to make sure our government allows us the freedom of travel to be able to go to Cuba. And of course, I hope that what will come of all this, and we're moving in the right direction, that there will be trade with Cuba. And the freer the trade, the better there is. But to set up a lot of rules and regulations and see if Cuba's going to be in NAFTA and the WTO, and are they going to obey the laws of the international organizations that are supposed to be promoting free trade, but they're promoting, you know, managed trade. You know, there can be some problems. Although those problems exist, it is so much better, because I remember the height of the Cold War and the day I was drafted into the military over the missile crisis in 1962. So we're a long cry from that. It's a long way from that, and that is wonderful that we've taken this step. It just bothers me to no end that the side that you would think would be for freer trade and for you know, better relationships, and are most strongly against it and might promote tariffs and protection, and strongly opposed. There's an element in this country strongly opposed. Oh no, it's still a communist country. Well, what did we do with China and Russia? We opened up the doors and things got better. And also, just think of the calamity that we participated in Vietnam, and we lost, and yet they became more westernized and more commercial, where we now, you know, trade with them. So it was so much better. We didn't wait till the communist system was destroyed and removed by some internal forces. What happened was it introduced the notion of trade, and therefore these countries will become more open to a democratic society and democratic system. And that, I believe, will happen with Cuba, but I'm sure there'll be some rocky days ahead.
All right, let's see what else is in store. Question number 3 or 4, depending on how we're counting them.
There we go.
This is Students for Rand. You've heard of him, haven't you?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember him.
Do you think the weapons used in the Benghazi attack could have been ones given to the rebels in Libya by the CIA?
Well, that I think is an easy one. It certainly could have been. I believe it is the case. I don't know whether we have absolute proof of, you know, the people who were killed and this sort of thing, and prove what weapons. But yes, I think it was. I think we sent weapons over there. We were doing once again, another unnecessary intervention over there. Gaddafi, another bad guy, but he was our friend when he'd do what we told him. And then we decide, well, we got to get rid of Gaddafi, just like now we're trying to get rid of Assad. And we go in there with special forces and the CIA and interfere, and we send them weapons, and all of a sudden it backfires. Unintended consequences occur, and now we continue to talk of Benghazi and trying to figure out what happens. We've had hearings, the recent hearings over Benghazi, about just really what happened, with whose guns did what, and yet they totally ignore the basic flaw in the system, and it's a foreign policy. Why are we in there anyway, stirring up the trouble? And why is it that these weapons get shifted around? Well, we make too many weapons. I don't believe weapons should be sold to other countries, especially with the technology developed by American taxpayers. I don't like the idea that we're the biggest arms manufacturers of the entire world. And yet that is what we do. We pass around these weapons. And I have said for many, many decades, matter of fact, yes, we generally go in there and we get involved and we give somebody weapons. We give them to the good guys. And I generally predict, and the predictions come true, the weapons end up being used against us. And I think that is so often the case. And it's the same way that once we start bombing a nation, and just recent history verifies this, we bomb a nation, and then we go in and we have to stabilize it, so we have to rebuild it. One of the excuses right now is why we're not doing so well in Afghanistan and Iraq is we didn't help enough. We didn't help rebuild their country after we blew it up. So I would say that we should be aware of the weapons. Just stop spreading these weapons out like this. The weapons should be used to defend this country and protect our national security, not to be interfering. But the answer is very, very likely that the American guns were used to do great harm to American citizens at Benghazi.
It's a tough one, yeah. Now we'll look at our next question coming up on the boards, lighting up the boards here. I'd like to ask Ron Paul, what do you think of forced association and forced diversity, and how can we put a stop to it without public outcry?
Well, I guess no matter what we do these days, there's always a public outcry. But the easy thing to target in on a question like this, because it's an important question, and that is force. Because if you believe in liberty, you accept the principle of the non-aggression principle, you're not allowed to use force, no matter what other people do with their money or their personal lives. You can't use force. And too often, that is all that we hear about. And it isn't one side does it and the other side is opposed to it. One side does it in one area and the other side does it in the other area. There's social force. Well, we have to have forced integration. We have to do this, forced associations. Sometimes we use force to discriminate against certain groups. We have discriminatory laws over the many, many years. And then another group comes along and says, well, no, you shouldn't do that. There shouldn't be the use of force in social matters and tell people what to do with their personal lives. But economics, that's a different story. People aren't smart enough to use their own money. It's the whole idea that people have a right to their life and the fruits of their labor, and it's part of their life, and they have the right and the obligation to spend it wisely. So all of a sudden, the do-gooders come in and say, well, people, and I've had congressmen tell me in economic terms, you need force to tell people what to do because they won't take care of themselves. Well, maybe if they had an incentive to do it, maybe if they weren't taught for decades that they have an entitlement system, and the entitlement ideology is both for the poor and the rich. The very rich, the people on Wall Street, they don't worry about morality if they're getting special benefits from the Federal Reserve and the military-industrial complex. They're not worried about that. And there's a lot of force there because they force upon the middle class and people who do work with a living a condition that undermines their wealth. They destroy the currency. They make people suffer because they can't earn interest on their savings. So just the principle of force is wrong. And diversity, this is the tough part about what freedom is all about for some people. And that is, if you're not tolerant, it doesn't work very well. And you say, well, what do you mean? Well, what if people do really dumb things, things that I think are immoral? People shouldn't be gambling, sexual habits that I think are immoral, but always done voluntarily without force. They read books that they shouldn't read because these ideologies and these religious beliefs, the radicalism, and we have to regulate all that. So, yes, if people don't hurt each other, and they're not using force against their neighbor or anybody else, nobody can use force to make them a better person by saying these are the social mores and this is what you have to do, same way in economic policy. The thing to remember is it's the rejection of the initiation of force, which is the principle of liberty, and then you don't have to worry about it. But if you are intolerant to people on how they spend their money, even if it is spent wastefully, or even if people have social habits which hurt themselves, then it doesn't work very well. And so this whole idea is based on a bit of tolerance, but it means that if you don't like what other people do, you have an obligation for your own behavior and your family, and you might persuade other people, you know, in a way that you think is proper, but never to use the arm might of the state to force upon people sort of social conditions that you think makes people better people or make them more responsible by putting a lot of rules and regulations on the economy.
Well, Dr. Paul, I think that's about all we have time for. There were so many good questions this time. There are always so many, and it's hard to narrow them down. One we couldn't get to, someone asked, when are you going to have Nigel on? Well, actually, we've had him on. We were lucky to have him on a while ago before the vote. And if you can look in our archives, youtube.com/Ron Paul Liberty Report, and you'll find the show. I don't remember exactly the date. Have him on again, we'd love to, and we've been in touch with his people, so yeah. He's probably a little bit busy, but we'd love to have him on.
Yeah, he's been a friend of the program, and we talked about him right after Brexit's vote, and that was exciting, and right now I'm sure he's very, very busy, but there'll be a day I'll bet he'll come back on our program.
Yeah, let's hope so.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.